Boker Tov, time to get started. Nice to see everybody this morning. Okay, we're going to start the fourth Perek in Perkei Avot. So if many of you probably know the first Mishnah here off by heart, and if not, you have it in front of you, great. I will explain it, well-known Mishnah, and hopefully we can add some insight into the Mishnah. Ben Zoma Omer, Ben Zoma says. So of course, everybody asks, what do you mean Ben Zoma? It's not very nice. The son of Zoma, well, who was he? First of all, Zoma is a very, very strange name, but we'll leave that aside. Ben Zoma. So we know we have Ben Azai, who we're going to meet in the next Mishnah. Ben Nanas. It's a little bit less famous, but he's quoted a few times in the Mishnah. Ben Nanas. Then you have, and then we have once quoted Ben Azai. So Ben Azai, we all know. That's Rav Yochanan Ben, Ben Zakkai. We have Ben Azai, and there's Ben Zakkai. So Ben Zakkai, whose first name was, you know, Yochanan, is quoted in the Mishnah in Sanhedrin that when there would be a capital case, you know, the Mishnah, in theory, the Torah says you get a death penalty for many sins of the Torah. But we all know in practice, it was very rarely done. A debate in the Mishnah, 7 years, 7 years, Rabbi Akiva said never. It was on the books, but we never, ever would apply it. And Rav Shimon Gamliel said, no, that's not a good policy. You have to apply it. You need a deterrent factor. But whatever that is, so the Mishnah has all these rules. And then one of the things is, so you don't have to ask what color shirt he was wearing. There's seven questions you have to ask. And where was it? When was it? What time, etc. But you don't have to ask if he was under an oak tree or a willow tree, or was it wearing a blue shirt or a white shirt. But if you do ask the witnesses that and they contradict each other, then you have to throw out the whole case. So if one witness says he's wearing a blue shirt and one says he's wearing a white shirt, case over. You can't convict. That's what the Mishnah says. So the Mishnah says Ben Zakkai would check Be'ukse Te'enim. He would check to know the figs, you know, the size of the figs. He was looking to get a contradiction. That's very nice. But why is he called Ben Zakkai? So the commentaries basically explain Ben is before you get smicha, before a person is ordained. He's his father's son. It's very interesting. Often, a lot of people know, and we have this by Ben Azai, but I don't think we have it by the others, if they're not married. So we know Ben Azai, as we'll see, did not get married. So, okay, when a person's not married, they're their parents, you know, child. It's kind of, that's how they're known. But the commentaries really say before they had smicha, before they were ordained, so they were known as their parents' child. So Ben Zakkai, the Mishnah tells us that that 40 years before the destruction of the temple, like in the year 30, the court disbanded. It was, you know, craziness. When if you can't do justice for all, then don't do any justice. It was, there was too much corruption. So they decided to disband the Sanhedrin instead of getting, you know, every eighth person who was deserving a court case, and the seven of the eight, they let go. So they just disbanded. So probably this happened when Ben Zakkai was very young. And that's why he's known as Ben Zakkai, because Rav Yochanan Ben Zakkai, and when the temple is destroyed, is the leading rabbi. Anyway, the Mishnah begins Ben Zoma, the child. In a certain sense, there's a nice idea. We know that in the laws of honoring parents, you're always supposed to give credit to your parents. So let's say you ask somebody for a favor, somebody knows, you know, I'm the son of so-and-so. Now, today, that doesn't sound so good. It sounds like nepotism in a sense, but there is a notion that whatever credit we have, whatever positive things we have to attribute to our parents. Whether it's fully true, partially true, doesn't even really matter. It's always more true than we think it is, but we have to give credit to our parents. Anyway, so Ben Zoma says, now who is Ben Zoma? Why did he not get smicha? And why didn't he get smicha? Well, they didn't like him. He failed. That's very unlikely. So we know Ben Zoma, we're talking now the period of Yavne. This is the flourishing of the Mishnah. This is Rav Elazar Ben Azari and Rav Gamliel and Rabbi Akiva, all our favorite rabbis of the Mishnah. And Ben Azai and Ben Zoma, they are part of this group. And the Mishnah says they're part of the Arba Shenichnesu Lepardes. There were four rabbis who went to study Pardes. Pardes means a garden. It's also the acronym they say for Pshat, Remesh, Drash, Vesod, the different methodologies that we approach a biblical text, the contextual meaning, the Pshat, the Drash, reading between the lines, the deeper meaning, Remesh, the hints, you know, the acronym, they put their first name, Shlomo Alkabet, you know, the Remesh and Sod. And I don't know, Kabbalistic, deeper meanings, it's much more than Drash, it's not for everybody. So famously, the Gemara says three of the four, it messed up their life. Ben Azai, Ben Zoma, and Acher, Rav Elisha Ben Avuya. The only one who managed to survive intact was Rabbi Akiva. So these were four sages who wanted to, you know, explore the secrets of the universe, who God was, etc. And it doesn't work. I actually find it quite fascinating because we're going to learn, as we all know, Eisu hu hachacham halomeid mikol adam, who's wise, who learns from everybody. So while the Ben Zoma is saying you can learn from everybody, the Gemara is telling you, yes, you can learn from everybody, but can't learn everything. There are certain things we can't learn. And Pardes, he went beyond what he was capable of doing. And he died. So he died young and he didn't get smicha. So he's known Ben Zoma. Okay, Beseder. The Gemara says, I find the word interesting. I don't know, maybe this is a bit of a homiletical, you know, drasha, but the Gemara says he tzitz. There are he tzitz. In other words, umate. He looked at God. He tzitz, he peeked at God and he died. And as we know, God told Moshe Rabbeinu, "Ki lo yirani Adam v'chai." Nobody can see me. We can't see God face to face. Moshe, whatever that means, because on the one hand, the Torah says, "Moshe, you can't see me. You can only see my back." And then the Torah tells us that Moshe spoke to God panim el panim. So it's a little bit of a contradiction there. Not for now, but normally we assume we can't see God at all. We can't see lo yirani Adam v'chai. So he tzitz v'mate. He died. So I don't know if it's connected, but maybe it is. So we know that the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, wore the tzitz. The tzitz was a headband made of gold. It says, Kodesh Lashem, holy unto God. And the tzitz sort of represented the resting of the divine presence on the high priest. And, you know, in a very difficult halakha, it's hard to imagine. Try it for one day and you'll go nuts. The Kohen Gadol was not allowed to raise his hands above his head because he can't put his hands above God. This represents the God. So the Kohen Gadol could only go as high as the tzitz. So the tzitz represents our limits, the extreme that we can go. So he tzitz the ra'ah. He took a look and he died. And I think it's connected. The tzitz is where God is. Perhaps it's connected to our tzitzit. What tzitzit? Also the boundary of our clothes, you know, the sort of just like the tzitz on top and the our tzitzit. But what's the purpose of tzitzit? You shall not go after your desires unless and do more than you're allowed to. So I don't know. But anyways, that's the Gemara says that Ben Zoma was one of the four sages who tried to go beyond what he's ready for. We know that you have to, knowledge is wonderful, but it has to be done in the proper way and for the proper people. And of course, we know throughout history, I guess the two main areas that have had huge debates, whether it's permissible to study are philosophy and Kabbalah, which in many ways are sort of opposite, even though they sound a little similar. And there were huge debates throughout Jewish history and who should study Kabbalah? We all know 40, whatever, can't study, should study philosophy. The Rashba put a ban on anybody under 25 years old to study of philosophy. And that's because we understand that as important as knowledge is, you have to go approach it at the proper time and place. Okay. So now let's see, what did he say? Eza, Ben Zomer, Eza hu chacham. So we know there are four things he tells us what to do. How to be wise, Eizu Chacham Gibor, how to be strong, how to be Ashir, rich, and how to be Mechubat, how to be honored. So this, I think, is well known, but these are basically the four stages of life. Most people, when they go through life, these are the things they want in life. When we're young, we want wisdom. We go to school, we go to an education, you know, to prepare us for the rest of life. Eizu Chacham. Gibor, strength, that also is associated with youth a little bit, you know, how strong we are in physical shape. And then, of course, wealth. As we enter into middle age, we start worrying about money. When we're young, we don't worry about money. We ask our parents, you know, and but as, you know, we develop to grow our own family. So wealth becomes a very concern for people. And then as we get older, money becomes less important than honor. People begin to realize they can't take their money with them, but a good name. So they either buy honor, they do other things. So these are the stages in life that a person you know seeks. And therefore, Ben Zoma is telling us what's the way to to get these things. They're all sort of, you'll notice, we'll leave that for the end. Okay, halo made me kol adam. So this sounds very simple. Eizu chacham, who is wise, somebody who learns from everybody. That's obvious. You have to learn from everybody and everything, every experience. But as we've already seen, it's not quite as obvious as one might think. There's a whole debate if we're allowed to learn Torah, let's say, from Acher. Was Rav Meir was criticized for learning Torah from Acher. Maybe we can't learn from everybody, because maybe people who are negative, have bad moral character, are going to negatively influence us. So so A. Ben Zomer probably disagrees. I mean, that's a debate. Many disagrees. The Rambam, of course, disagrees. Kabel Amat Mimi Shomro. We accept truth from wherever it comes from. So it could be Ben Zoma is just saying, no, we accept the opinion. Doesn't matter who you are. We can learn from everybody and everything. But I would say, even according to those opinions, that one should not learn Torah from somebody who is of not proper moral character, because Torah is not just knowledge. It's sort of a way of life, and knowledge we can get from everybody. That's what Tibish is saying. Knowledge doesn't matter where it comes from. Yes, maybe a way of life that we only learn from certain people. So that's Ezul Alameh Mikol Adam, and we know that Adam in rabbinic and sort of biblical Hebrew generally means non-Jews. You know, Re'ehu, V'hafta L'Re'acha Kamocha, this week's Parsha. So many assume that technically the mitzvah to love people and to treat people properly is a Jewish mitzvah. It's among Jews. We're part of the club. We have to be nice to everybody, of course. We can't cheat anybody. But the special mitzvot, that's internally to the club. Reyacha, or achicha, you know, the Torah, you know, we have many mitzvot in the Torah like that. But when the Torah uses Adam ki yakriv in Vayikra, a man who brings a sacrifice, and we know that non-Jews were allowed and encouraged to bring, you know, sacrifices to the temple. The temple was Beit Tfilah L'chol Hamim. It was a place of prayer and gathering for all people. So Alomei Mikol Adam is also, of course, telling us that we should learn from Jew and non-Jew, and we can learn from everybody. Now, why would somebody not want to learn from everybody? Because it's a little bit of arrogance. Why should I learn? Who's this young knucker to teach me anything? I'm much no more. So this is also a lesson in being humble. And we all know, famously, we all know that the Talmud says, you learn mitami dayo termi kulam. I learned a lot from my teachers, more from my colleagues, and mitami dayo termi kulam. And I learned the most from my students. And of course, it doesn't mean it literally. I think anybody who's a teacher knows, of course, in terms of material, you learn much more from your teacher. But in terms of thinking and critical analysis and reevaluation, you learn much more from your students. And, you know, I can attest firsthand knowledge. You know, I teach at CHAT, you know, the community high school here, as many of you know, and sometimes the insights of the students, and because it's a community high school and kids coming from all types of backgrounds, you know, in a sort of a, I don't know how to say this, you know, in a straight Orthodox school, you know, kids are sort of trained. There's certain things they can't ask. It's sort of like, don't raise certain questions. We don't have those inhibitions don't exist in CHAT. And sometimes it's wonderful. Sometimes the kids, the insight or the question they ask really forces me to reevaluate and reanalyze things that I've, you know, learned 100 times. So mitamidayo termi kulam, you have to, can't be so arrogant that I can't learn from other people. And the Gemara gives the example, Torah is compared like Eish, you know, Eish HaTorah, the fire of Torah, because a small little flame, a little nothing can ignite a big fire. So Talmud says a little student can ignite the great Torah scholar. We can learn the most from our insights of other people. The Gemara takes it a step further. And I guess, I don't know if the first time I heard this Gemara, but I know the Gemara is, maybe it is. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein wrote an article many, many years ago. I may have referred to it once before. Is there a morality and ethic beyond halacha? In other words, can you say that the Torah has a sort of ethical framework, but we can do better? We can do the Torah doesn't have, there's higher ideals. So we know within the Torah system, we have Lifnei Mishurat Hadin, we have the law, and we can do beyond. But so that's Rav Lichtenstein and his, you know, in his style examine, what does the question mean? And that is a question to go beyond the law. Is that part of the law, et cetera? But in that article, Rav Lichtenstein quotes the Gemara in Erevin says that had the Torah not been given, we could have learned morality from the animal kingdom. We could have learned modesty from the cat, that's what the Gemara says, honesty from the ant. The cat, apparently the cat always cleans up after itself. I don't own a cat. Honesty from the ant, they never steal from one another. Like chastity from the dove, and derech eretz from the rooster. That's how the Gemara says. In other words, the animal kingdom has much to teach us as Jews. So we go beyond Ben Zoma. Halomei Mikol Adam, includes much more than Halomei Mikol Adam. By the way, I think this is also a problem in reverse. I was mentioning I'm a teacher, so many, Rav Soloveitchik always called himself, a malamed. That's what his hobby was, a malamed. That's often that was used as a disparaging term, unfortunately. And of course, Rav Soloveitchik wanted to give it great pride. So we all know, but people, they much prefer to teach in a high school than in an elementary school. And I guess they prefer to teach in university and, the higher education. You want to teach people on a higher level. I don't waste my time on a grade four student. What do they know? So on a certain level, of course, there's something to that, that somebody, these great European Talmidei Chachamim who came after the war, survived the war, and it was very difficult. We didn't appreciate it as wild kids. Somebody who knew Shas inside out, backwards and forwards, teaching me in grade five in Associated. It's sad. It's sad that so it has to, what are they doing? On the other hand, of course, teaching, it's very important to teach little kids. It's probably more important to teach little kids than, because the older we get, the less influence we have. We all know that it's much nicer and more pleasant to teach adults so they don't yell and scream at you and do all kinds of, but Baruch Hashem, not such a problem. But we all know adults is much easier to teach and there's a more intellectual thing sometimes, but it's much more impactful to teach younger people. So you have to find a balance. So it's not only halomeid mikol adam, you have to be willing, because it's lomod almanot, you learn so you can teach and teach to do, right? The mitzvah of Talmud Torah, there is no mitzvah in the Torah to learn Torah, right? By the way, the Torah never says you have to learn Torah, as far as I know. And the Torah always says you have to study, you have to teach Torah. The mitzvah to learn Torah, b'shinantan levanecha, sheyudivrei Torah mechudadim v'pipicha. You have to teach your children, new to teach, you have to know a lot. The Torah should be sharp, mechudadim v'pipicha. You should, in order to teach, but the mitzvah is recorded, not as a mitzvah to learn, it's recorded as a mitzvah to teach. V'limada tamatam epenechem, you should teach your children. So the goal of learning is not to learn, it's to teach. Of course, the goal of learning and teaching is so you should, do. But the Torah doesn't care about learning. Learning is just a hechsher mitzvah to teach. You have to teach everybody. I remember Rav Schechter quoting that, of course he teaches on the highest levels and he's, the posek for so much of really the modern Orthodox world, the posek of the OU, and so many rabbis turned to him. And I remember him saying, in shir, and, I mentioned I was in a shir before he was, famous for 4 years in the 80s, before he was well known, what he knows is unbelievable. But he would say sometimes, what he does, it's much more important. Some rabbi teaching Aleph Beit in the small city or teaching about Kashrut and Shabbat, he felt he was doing much more important work than he was doing. How many, you don't have to know a Tosfot and a Rav Chaim. You don't have to know that stuff. It's nice to know, though few people have to know it. It doesn't, it's not so important everybody knows. Everybody can know the basic. So often we get, we have to be much more open in our intellectual pursuits, who we study with, and what we're spending time in and the little things we teach. So that's what Ben Zoma is teaching. I think we know a lot of this, but sometimes we don't, internalize it. Okay. Mikom alamda hiskalti. That's what he quotes. I've learned everything. I learned a lot from all who teach me. Ezu gibor hakovesh et yitro. Who is strong? Who one who conquers his inclination. So I always like to point out in Hebrew, there are two words for strength. There is gibor and koach. So hanotein le'ya'ev koach. One who gives the tired gives them strength. So that's physical strength. Physical strength. Koach is notein le'ya'ev. I'm tired. I'm weak. Ozer Yisrael b'gvura. Gvura is spiritual strength. So the gvura ezehu gibor. Of course, ezehu koach. Okay, you can win the weightlifting class, whatever. But the Mishnah, of course, is much more interested in gvura than in koach. And that's how Kovesh et Yitro, one who can conquer their inclination. Now, by the way, the inclination is good. We need inclinations. And that, so most people read this, HaKovesh et Yitro, so assume that's our Yetzer Hara. We have to go and subdue our Yetzer Hara. So, I mean, the person wants to sin, and he's strong enough to withhold. He wants to gossip a little bit, and he's sort of, you know, debating in his head, and he can withhold not to say what he was thinking of saying. That's all true, but we also know the Yetzer Hara, of course, is a very, very positive thing. We just have to channel it. We don't have to eliminate it. We can't eliminate it. We don't want to eliminate it. The Gemara says without the Yetzer, we need a Yetzer Hara to make money. We've discussed this before. We need a Yetzer Hara for our sexual drive. Otherwise, nobody would have kids. We need the Yetzer Hara. We just have to learn how to utilize it. And the truth of the matter, the Yetzer Tov is sometimes not always the right thing. Sometimes we have to subdue our Yetzer Tov. Sometimes being extra kind is not the proper approach. But anyways, that, you know, HaKovesh Yitzro Tov Erech HaPayim Mikibor, one who has patience. Erech HaPayim is long. He didn't withhold like God. God is an Erech HaPayim. Mikibor, that's better than a strong person. And here, presumably, the gibor probably does have a physical connotation. Moshe Baruch Hu Milokedir, one who can rule over his spirit than somebody who conquers a city. Okay, now let's get to the most important one, the hardest one, and the Ezu Ashir. So this is who is wealthy? Who is wealthy? So, the first thing, Sameach b'chalko, is happy what I have. So the first thing I always like to point out is this is not a Musar Drasha. This is not some rabbi, you know, telling us, yeah, people have money, but, you know, real wealth is, you know, is somewhere else. That's not what it means. This is an economic, this is economics 101. And the reason it's economics 101 is maybe on when they had the gold standard, it was slightly different. But for sure in the modern economy, but even in the gold standard, of course, what's money? Money is a piece of paper. You take out a green piece of paper. I know in the United States, all your bills look alike. In Canada, you know, it's easy to confuse the one. We don't have $1 bills anymore here anyways, $1 or $2 bills. We only started the $5 bill. We have a loonie and a toonie. And, you know, we have a blue $5 and the purple and green, you know, nice and colorful. I know Americans say it's like our monopoly money. Okay, Beseder. It's actually Canadian dollar reached a 3-year high yesterday. So we're catching up. We're at 80 cents. Our Canadian dollar is worth about 80 US cents. Anyways, whatever. Basically, money is a piece of paper that the government says allows you to purchase certain things. It's legal tender. The government gives it legal. When the Austro-Hungarian Empire fell, all their money became worthless. That's Barrow Wine has that as a tragic irony of history that Herzl tragically died as a young man. And in order to, you know, to help his family and stuff, I think people raised a lot of money and they invested it in the Austro-Hungarian bonds. They became absolutely worthless. Had they invested it in Bank Leumi in Israel, be multimillionaires. So, the great Zionists, yeah, that's Zionism. But when it comes to money, you know, well, let's do where the real money is. So that's whatever. So money is only the ability to do something. So if I have everything I need, I mean, it's obvious. If I have everything I need, I'm wealthy. If I have $5 billion, but I can't, I don't have enough to buy the Dallas Cowboys or the New York Yankees, you know, and I want it and I can't get it. So you're not wealthy. You're not really wealthy. You don't have what you, you don't have the ability to get what you want. It's really an economic, it's an economic lesson. Ezu Ashir Sameach B'Chalko. One to be happy. This is very, very hard. We all know this. It's like probably one of the hardest teachings to observe. The Gemara says, Mishesh Lomana Rotsema Time, the nature of human beings is to always want more. And some of that is good. That's what we said before, the Yetzer Hara. We need that a little bit. But too much is no good. Too much is no good. So you have to be happy. My father, Lava Shalom, would always explain, I think, very beautifully, Ezu Ashir Sameach B'Chalko. Who is happy? One B'Chalko. See, my portion is Chalki, what I have. Chalko is what you have. So the real rich person is somebody who can be happy with what somebody else has. That's even harder. That somebody else wins the lottery and you're not jealous. That somebody else has a much nicer house or whatever and you're not jealous. Hasameach b'chelko. That's a tremendous you know, level to reach. We all know that everything is relative. You know, those who've read Dan Ariely's book on Predictably Irrational. He's an Israeli author. He lives, I think he's a professor at Duke University, but he grew up in Israel. Israeli, he was very, very seriously injured, almost died in youth explosion at a bonfire or something, and whatever, became a big psychologist. So his first chapter, if you've read it, everything is relative. We judge things. It's fascinating, the examples he brings. We always judge things in relation to others. You know, when everybody else is living in a small home, we're happy. I always like to use the example of athletes. You know, guys making, you know, $10 million a year. But as soon as the next player signs for $12 million, I had a better season than him. My $10 million is meaningless. It's actually tragic. It's so tragic that we judge ourselves by what other people do. So a person is wealthy is sameach b'chalko. He's happy with what the other person has. So that's something to try. How many people here know who Dan Price is? You can put it in the chat box or raise your hand or speak. Gravity, maybe you don't know his name, but maybe you know who he is. So actually, let me share my screen for a moment. I'll just show you who he is. where are we going here? Give me one second. I was here. I had it before. Okay, yeah, here we go. Give me one second now. Let me share my screen. I just mean it's kind of cute. So this is Dan Price. You can see the picture. He needs a haircut, maybe. Depends who you ask. Okay. So Dan Price is CEO of this company. What's it called? They say Gravity Payments. Introduced a $70,000 minimum salary for all the staff of 120. And personally took a pay cut of $1 million. 5 years later, he's still on the salary, whole article. So Dan Price is, he read, I believe it's based on Kahneman's book. Dan Kahneman, who I've mentioned, I think, before. I think he's phenomenal. Dan Kahneman, the Israeli psychologist, now won the Nobel Prize, professor emeritus at Princeton University. He, I think, developed a lot of the psychological testing for the Israeli army. He was a young psychologist. He was in Europe during the war as a young kid. He was born in Israel, I think, then went and, you know, he taught at Hebrew U, and he wrote the book Thinking Fast and Slow. And he, one of the papers he wrote, we all know this, that wealthy people are not happier. Wealth doesn't bring happiness. So he did a research paper, and he showed that, I guess for the typical American, once you're earning 70,000, I think it was 75, the article there, this like 70, but it doesn't really matter. Once you're earning 70 or $75,000, there's no increase in happiness, no matter how much money you have. In other words, the assumption is $70,000, you have your basic needs. That's talking about kids who are pending into day schools. That's a whole different, you know, or calculation. So he read this study that Kahneman showed that there's no increase in happiness. So he has his company. So he decided he's going to give everybody a $70,000, you know, salary. And the secretary who was making, you know, 25 or 30, and remember in the United States, minimum wage is like $8 an hour in some states. So he gave everybody in the company who was earning under 70, an automatic raise to $70,000. He had to pay for it. So he was making over $1 million. So he cut his salary from $1 million to $70,000. And that's what he did. And that's what he's still doing. So it's all article. Fascinating. Fascinating. He said, why shouldn't everybody be happy? Be the equal happy. I'm not going to be happier anyways to make money. I have extra money. Sometimes marben nechasi, marben daga. Sometimes the more money you have, the worse off, the less happy you are. Very tragically, his brother sued him. His brother sued him because his brother was a partner in the company. Why should I pay the secretary $70,000? I can get one for $25,000. So anyways, that's I just think, you know, it's always nice to see these wonderful examples of people doing things. And I don't think there's no obligation to do that, whatever. It's just, it's really something quite special, which is, I guess, why it's written up in the newspaper, what he did. Anyways. So that's Ezo Ashir Hasamech Bechalko, one who can be happy with what he has and doesn't want more. And that's a challenge that can keep us busy the rest of our life. And then the Gemara quotes the Pasuk, the Mishnah, Yegi Kapecha Kitochel Ashrecha Betovlach. Yagia kapecha, the sweat of our brow, or what we've gained from our work, ki tochala eat ashrecha, it's we bless it and it's good for you. So this verse actually, if you think about it, puts a new twist on what it means. Yagia kapecha ki tochal v'tovlach. The Gemara uses this as an idea that the Gemara says a person who earns his own way, like he works for a living, and he sustains himself, he supports himself. He's greater than a Yirei Shamayim. It's like an amazing statement. He's greater than somebody who fears heaven, because it says Ashrecha, blessed v'tovlach, and it's good for you. And when the Gemara, the pasuk describes someone who fears God, it says Ashrei Ish Yirei Hashem, blessed is the person who fears God. It doesn't say blessed and it's good for the person who fears God. So the tovlach, it's better. It's not only better for you, and the Gemara is sort of interpreting the tovlach, it's better for society. You're a better person. One who works for a living is on a higher level than one, even though he's much less God-fearing. The Gemara doesn't say anything. Maybe he's not God-fearing at all. I don't know. Gemara doesn't say. Just says, one who can benefit from what he makes, that's greater than one who's a Yirei Shamayim. So it sounds like, what does it mean? Ezu asher samech b'chalko. B'chalko doesn't just mean with what you have. You know, your parents left you a big inheritance, you're happy, whatever. It means the person who's happy from what he himself earned. It's not just enough to have enough money. In other words, the earning should come from you. Hasamech b'chalko, what he did, the yakia kapecha ki tochal, the work, the sweat of his brow that he did to produce work. I don't have to tell what, you know, that can mean any job, but I assume, not that they necessarily quoted the Mishnah, but I'm sure many of them did know it. The early settlers, the early Zionists, kibbutzim, the whole idea, yakia kapecha sounds like, you know, like manual labor, blue collar work, what do we call it in English, you know, working on a kibbutz. And that was the kibbutz ideology, that you could be, it's sort of, you know, these great, you can have a PhD, but you got to get up at 4 a.m. and milk the cows and the old kibbutzim. So yagia kapecha, the not just what you earn like today as in the law office or in the banking, whatever, but the kapecha, your hands, the labor of your hands, kitochal. So the happiness, it's the money, it's not just you should be happy with what you have, even the source. In other words, we always look ezo asher, whatever you had should be happy with, don't always look for more, etc. But it also, the verse they quote gives the implication that we should get the money on our own. We shouldn't, you know, we don't want handouts. So matanot yichyeh. The pasuk says, one who hates gifts will live. You know, it's an important lesson sometimes for all of us. Now, by the way, when I was talking before in Samech Bechalko, be happy with somebody else. So that exactly is the meaning in this week's Parsha, the most important pasuk in the Chumash, according to Rabbi Akiva. Vahafta l'reacha, l'recha kamocha. To love your neighbor as yourself. So that's a very difficult verse. It's a difficult verse. A, it's impossible. And B, it isn't true. What I mean is, let's start, it isn't true. What I mean, it's not true. So take Rabbi Akiva. Now, why do we take Rabbi Akiva? Because it's Rabbi Akiva who said, Zekla gadova Torah. Rabbi Akiva claims that Vahafta l'recha kamocha is the most important verse in the Torah. Rashi already tells us that Kedoshim is the most important parsha in the Torah. Daver b'nei Israel, you know, Kedoshim to you. What did it say? Right, everybody gathers all together, right? Rov gufei Torah teluyim ba. This parsha, the majority of the essence of the Torah is dependent on this parsha. Don't take revenge. Don't bad advice. All the famous ethical mitzvot are in this parsha in Kedoshim. That's Rabbi Akiva. No, we all know. Rabbi Akiva says two people are in the desert. Rahman al-Islam, there's one canteen of water. And they don't know exactly, but the assumption is if two people drink, they'll both die. If one person drinks, you should live. So Ben Petura, you know, we never hear of him. Like Ben Petura, who was Ben Petura? Ben Petura says, they split it. how can you take more than your friend? How can you take more than your friend? What does Rabbi Akiva say? No, chayach kotmi. You come first. You live and then your brother. Whoa, 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 whoa. What happened to Vahafta l'reacha kamocha? What happened there? So it's a nice idea, but clearly it's not halachically true. It's the same Rabbi Akiva. The same Rebbe says this is the most important verse in the Torah. It tells you that when it, you know, that when push comes to shove, my life comes first. Yeah, it's true, you can't kill somebody innocently to save their life, but I don't have to save his life before I save my life. I can for sure save my life before I save his life. We also know it just is impossible. What do you mean? Who are we kidding? It's impossible to love. We love ourselves. We don't love other people the same way we love ourselves, except for our children. But it's impossible. So all the commentaries explain. That's why it doesn't say Re'acha Kamocha. It says Li'Re'acha Kamocha. It's all the commentaries. The Pasuk, like so much of the Torah, the Torah doesn't mean it literally. The Torah is sort of putting a sort of a heavenly ideal. Remember, we've often explained the written Torah is the divine perspective. The oral laws, how the Torah, the divine perspective is translated into a realistic world. That's why it's the people who defy the oral law. We tell God, Torah's not in heaven. God, you stay out of this. So the Torah, you know, the oral law tells us how to live. The Torah presents, you should get died, that we were talking about before. This sin died. Yeah, on the divine perspective. But in the real world, that doesn't work. So Avatal Re'echa Kamocha doesn't really mean it on a literal sense. It means, you, as the Ramban, I think, says, you want to have wealth, you should want your friend to have wealth. You want wisdom, you should want your friend to have wisdom. The same things you want for yourself, you want for them, and you're going to love him the same way you love yourself. So in a certain sense, that's exactly what Hasameach Bechelko is. In other words, Vata L'Recha Kamocha means the things I want for me, I should want for others. And I shouldn't be jealous of other people. That's easier said than done. Okay, but that's a little bit, money is important, very important, but we have to put it in perspective. Ezu Mechubad, who was honored? HaMechaved et HaBriyot, one who honors Briyot. Now, what is Briyot? I said before, Adam is all human beings. Re'acha, Achicha, there's certain words, key words that indicate the talking to the whole world, to the Jewish people. So Mechaved et HaBriyot is sort of more like creation, the animal kingdom, right? It's not just human beings. Here we say it directly, all that which is created, trees and grass and birds and, right? And we all know that the way we treat nature often reflects how we treat human beings. That's what the Torah says, ki adam eitz hasadeh, right? The Torah exactly says we are trees. We mentioned that last week, that a person whose actions are, whose fear of heaven is greater than his actions, like a tree rooted that can't be up, you know, can't blow away. But if his actions are greater than his sort of fear of God, then the tree will blow away. We have the image, Eitz Chaim, the image of a tree is very, very strong. But the image of the tree is also reflects how we relate to nature, right? And that's what the famous Midrash, that one of the reasons man was created at the end was if man sins, that you're a nobody. Look, everybody was created before you. They're even better than you are. So HaMechaved et HaBriyot, one who can honor and respect and see glory in all of nature and all of God's creation, that who's honored. So that's also, these things are well known, but as we all mentioned, the Mesilat Yesharim always says, the Mesilat Yesharim, the great work of Musar, of Moshe Chaim Lutzato, says that the most obvious things is what you have to say. You know, he says, no, he's going to have nothing new in his book. His book is going to have I'm trying to hang up, but they keep calling back. There's nothing new in his book, nothing novel. And I'm just going to repeat the important thing because we all know that. That's why we daven the same way. The rabbi has to talk about the same things on Yom Kippur because that's human nature. The more you say, that's all the propagandists know that. The more you repeat something, the more people believe it. So that's what he said. I mentioned the Vilna Gaon said that was the biggest chiddush, the biggest insight. He said, there's nothing new. What are you talking about? The whole book is new, right? You can say the same thing that's new, that's old. Everybody knows how I'm talking, but you can say it in the way. Anyway, just one last point on the Mishnah. Notice something that they all have in common. Wisdom, strength, wealth, and honor are generally things that are beyond our control, right? How smart you are is whatever IQ you got, right? We know, we all went to school with some brilliant kid and, you know, can whiz by, and we're not blessed with such wisdom. Strength, well, you know, that depends how your muscle build, how you work with some people are not, you know, you don't make it to any sports league. Yes, they work hard, but if they're not naturally gift-given physical, you know, great specimens, you're not going to become a professional athlete. Wealth, it's a little bit harder to see, but we know it. Wealth is, I mean, like the pandemic has really showed it. Wealth is not in our control. You know, when the luck of the draw, I always say that that's why the Torah is so many mitzvot of money. In other words, for every person who's wealthy, who's a multimillionaire, there are 10 people at least who are just as smart, who work just as hard. Whenever they just didn't, you know, it didn't work. They didn't have the luck of the draw, the right timing in the place. Something happened, some international trade deal, and wow, they could make millions, or something happens and their business is kaput through no fault of your own. Wealth, so much of our wealth is not dependent on us. So we call it luck and call it all things. We call it God. That God, that's what the Gemara says. It's very hard for us to recognize that God determines on Rosh Hashanah how wealthy we're going to be. We say this all the time, right? That's what the Gemara says. On Rosh Hashanah, God determines how much wealth we're going to have. That's why Nasata v'natata be'emunah, the first question God asked us at 120, Nasata v'natata, where your business dealings done be'emunah. Emunah is a strange word, faithfully. Because how we act in business shows that we believe in God. A person who cheats in business is an atheist. We're all a little atheist. Most people are a little bit atheist. It's hard to believe in God all the time. But to believe in God means to act on it, right? Same thing when I believe in God. So if you truly believe that God controls our wealth, the wealth is not in our hand, then what's the point of, by cheating, you're trying to outsmart God. So wealth is not up to us. Yes, all of these things, we could work on it, but fundamentally, so much of life is out of our control. And of course, honor is out of our control. Who's going to honor and who's going to, you know, give us honor? And of course, what Ben Zoma is saying, he's putting this all into our hands. These are the way to achieve these attributes by things we can do. We're not dependent on other people. Wisdom, it doesn't matter how smart you are, IQ, it matters, are you always learning? Are you halomed? Is of course in the present tense. Gibor has nothing to do with your physical strength, has to do with our moral character that we can work on. Wealth, nothing to do with how much money you have. It's that to do with your attitude towards money. And honor has nothing to do with what other people are going to tell you. It has to do with how you treat everything else. So I think it's a beautiful way. What Ben Zoma is saying is those things that are really not in our control, that we can't do, we really can. There are ways to true wisdom and true wealth, et cetera, is like this. Okay. I think we can move on unless anybody has any questions. Maybe I'll take a quick look. Avodah Peirov Yeshbo Sipuk. Okay, Tova. Yes, you get satisfaction from your worth. Ayef Avodah. Right. By the way, Avodah, right. So there's a difference, you know, between Avodah and Milacha, right? On Shabbat, we're allowed to work. Avodah is not, I can climb the CN Tower all day on Shabbat. Maybe it's not nice. It's not, right? But it's milacha, it's creativity that I cannot do. We do distinguish. On yontif, it's melechet avodah. It's only those works that are avodah. Yontif has a slightly different definition of what is allowed. But right, la'avda v'la'shomra, right? Man was put into Gan Eden, la'avda, to work it. Now that means to work the garden, u'la'shomra, and to guard it. So at one point, but that's also a contradiction. When you guard something, you can't work on it, right? If I have to guard something, I'm not allowed to use it. I have to protect it, right? La'avda u'lishomra. So if I'm working it, I'm not protecting it. But that's exactly
on the contrary. When you work it, you have to protect it.
Yeah, of course. What the Torah is teaching us is in this world, the way to protect something is to work on it. The way to protect Torah is not just to keep Torah in some pristine state and never changes. And Torah always changes, as I always teach my students. Or The Torah is the halacha, how to live our life, is the intersection between a never-changing Torah, a divine Torah, and an ever-changing life, ever-changing reality. Halacha is how do we apply the divine Torah, that we said, the Torah Shebichtav, divine Torah, to the oral Torah, to the reality of the world. So since the reality of the world is always changes, the output is always going to change. So, you know, halacha is always going to change. Okay, I'm not going to get into all the, you know, the arguments. We're not talking that. We're talking, anybody who knows anything about the halachic system, of course, knows that. The fact that I'm giving the shiur in English is, you know, is a total change. And, you know, that was a big fight at one time. You know, certain, it's reality. So avodah, the only way to shomer is to work on it and to keep it going. Anyways, okay. Gary Pentour is the guy who did not want to become a Niftar, which of course happened. I'm not sure what you mean by that. You can explain later. Maybe we'll leave that till the end of this year. Letting women and children leave a sinking ship first. Reyacha. Yeah, so that's a fascinating discussion. Is that really true? And maybe it is true because it's true in modern society. Would the halakha say that it's proper to save women and children first? I don't want to get into that whole discussion. First of all, I'm not prepared for it. But B, it's very complicated because the last Mishnah in Masechet Horiot gives a hierarchy of who you save first. That's the Kohen before the Levi before the Israel, a man before a woman. If a woman is taken captive, you save the woman before the man. But to save, it seems to be who has more mitzvot. And then the Mishnah famously concludes, but a mamzer tamad chacham, that's the source. The mamzer, the illegitimate child who's a Torah scholar, comes before the Kohen Gadol, the high priest who's in the Amaretz. It's a very difficult, very politically incorrect Mishnah in our days. Rav Moshe Feinstein writes, everybody assumes like that. We don't follow this Mishnah. A pretty wild statement. We just don't, because this comes up in hospital treatments. They're talking now, we hope it doesn't get there, that in Ontario, they may have to do a lottery on who can they treat. Our hospitals are overwhelmed. Those people know, of course, in Toronto, and they don't have enough beds in intensive care. They can't treat everybody. They don't have enough staff. They just don't have. So they're saying that maybe they're just going to do a lottery who they're going to try to save, which lives they're going to, it's like unbelievable. But so the Mishnah lays out, you can't save everybody. You save, we would be very not right. Rav Moshe says you save the first person who comes. So I would think, don't quote me on this, but just throwing out an idea, the concept of saving women and children first does not really have any, I'm not saying it's forbidden necessarily, but it doesn't have any basis in halakha, as I would understand it. I don't think so. Maybe we have to take into account from questions like this. Maybe we have to take into account how society sees it. I don't know. That's for another time. Okay, let's go to Mishnah Beit. Ben Azai, Omer, heavy retzah mitzvah, kala kivachamur, run to a light mitzvah and to a heavy mitzvah, borech min aveira. Okay, well, I don't know how far we'll get in this. We for sure won't finish. I don't think we'll finish the Mishnah. Okay, so of course, Ben Azai, we talked a little bit about Benzo. So Ben Azai was his other partner in the four people, one of his partners in Arba Nichnasu Lepardes. Four people were touring Nichnasu, trying to esoteric knowledge that was beyond them, lo made mikol adam, but not lo made everything. And Ben Azai, he was mekakel. He had messed him up too. And of course, Ben Azai is most famous, I think, most famous because he didn't want to get married. And I forgot to look it up. When he quotes something about getting married, I think about the halachas of how many children you have to get married or a discussion. So they told him, not a doresh ve'eno na'a mekayim. It's very nice. You explain things very well. It would be nice if you actually followed what it says in the Torah, right? Torah is not about teaching Torah. It's about following the Torah, not just teaching. So you're teaching us what I do, but like Mr. Ben Azai, like it's about time you got married already. And Ben Azai said, you're right. What can I do? Nafshi chashka b'Torah. I love Torah so much. I married the Torah. I cannot change a diaper at 2 o'clock in the morning. I can't go waste my time shopping. My God, the narishkeit, cleaning, cooking, diapers, carpools. That's not for me. I want to learn Torah day and night. Nafshi chashka b'Torah. I love Torah so much. I can't get married. There are people like that. They're not. So we consider that a little bit abnormal. We consider that he's not living a normal life. It's true. I don't think Ben Azai, I don't mean it in a, he wasn't, the rabbis were critical of him. He wasn't normal. That's not what the Torah says. The Torah says we should live a normal life, normal human beings. And we get married and you don't have to learn Torah. Then maybe changing a diaper is more important, whatever. But that was Ben Azai, famous Ben Azai, Nafshi Chashka B'Torah. What's amazing, and Rav Soloveitchik has an explanation of this, what's unbelievable, is the Rambam, we don't have people like this, but the Rambam writes that if a person says, I'm like Ben Azai, I learn Torah day and night, kind of what the Rambam says about learning in Kollel. I'm learn Torah day and night, and he does like Ben Azai, and he doesn't get married. He mamish learns 20, whatever, I don't know. The Rambam says you have to sleep 8 hours a night. No, okay, I don't know. 16 hours a day minimum of learning Torah. So the Rambam writes, Ein biyado avon. It's a very strange language. He doesn't have sin in his hand. The Rambam doesn't say it's a good idea. The Rambam's not in favor of this. But the Rambam doesn't say he's sinning. Ein b'yadu afod. If somebody is on such a level, we assume nobody alive today is like that. A guy thinks he's ben azeh, send him to a psychiatrist. But a person who truly feels that way, I can't learn. I mean, there are some people, maybe they really shouldn't get married. That's a lot of the discussion, but okay. Ben azeh said, nafshi chash ein b'yadu afod. So Rav Soloveitchik explained, it's kind of what we explained. Vishinantan lefanecha, elu talmidecha. You should teach your children. Who are your children? Your students are your children. It's not the only purpose, right? But clearly one of the main purposes of having children is to pass our tradition down from generation to generation. As a matter of fact, where's the mitzvah to have children written in the Torah? I'm sure you asked 100 people on the street. So 99 of them will tell you it's Pru'eru, the first mitzvah in the Torah. So that's sort of true, but as the Rambam famously says, that wouldn't count. Had the Torah not repeated anything written before Matan Torah doesn't count unless the Torah repeats it. So we had last week's Parsha, Isha ki tazriya v'yalda zachar, u'b'yom ha'shmini yemo basar olato. So the Torah there talks about Pru'eru, having children, and having a brit milah, u'b'yom ha'shmini, on the eighth day, and the Gemara says the eighth day, even on Shabbat. What about Avram? Don't I know brit milah from Avram Avinu? Yeah, I know that. But it wouldn't have been, according to the Rambam anyways, it wouldn't have been binding had the Torah not repeated the mitzvah of Pru'eru again, and brits of milah again. Now, what happened here? There seems to have been a fundamental change in the nature of the mitzvah. Again, it's not either or. There's a little bit of both. The original mitzvah of Pru'eru, remember, there are no Jews in the world. God presumably didn't plan to create Jews. Well, whatever, we won't go there now. He created man. All of man, all of man is created in his image. All of man should follow in God's path. The purpose of Pru'eru is mu'u et ha'aretz v'chiv shua, fill the land and conquer it. That's the purpose of Pru'eru, to settle the earth. As the Ramban explains, to build highways, he doesn't use the word highways, bridges and mine oil, mine gold, like to take nature and harness nature for man's purpose, to create cures for diseases, pru'art melu arts v'chipshua. At Matan Torah, the mitzvah of Pru'eru underwent a transformation. The mitzvah of Pru'eru is no longer just to conquer the world. The mitzvah of Pru'eru is to teach Torah to our children, to pass Torah on to our children. There's the Pru'eru before Matan Torah and the Pru'eru after Matan Torah. And after Matan Torah, the focus, and that's a uniquely Jewish mitzvah. Pru'eru keeps you at arts is the whole world. That's Jew and non-Jew. Pru'eru after Matan Torah, that's a Jewish unique mitzvah to pass on Torah. So if that's what Pru'eru is, so a person who spends his entire life teaching Torah, Vishinantan Levanecha, teach your children, these are your students, they have a partial fulfillment of Pru'eru. So it's true the Torah would prefer us, okay, that's a nice drush, it's a nice, you know, thing, and it's true, but ein mikra yotzei midei pruto. The Torah also has to have the meaning of what it says. Like you can't only have the extra level of meaning. The extra level of meaning is nice, but the base level of meaning you need. So of course, you have to have real children, biological, if you can. Not everybody's blessed with children. That's what Yishayahu says. We read it at the most beautiful of Torah of the year. Read it on the fast days. How does the pasuk go? Gimar l'sarisim, I can't remember the verse now. Somebody put the pusa in Yishayahu. Komar shel sarisim asher yishmeru et shabbatotai, I will give them. They should keep Shabbos and support Torah, and I'll give them a Yad Vashem. And that's of course the origin of Yad Vashem in Israel. I'm sure, I don't know if everybody knows that, right? I will give those people who can't have children, and tov mi banim umi banot, Yishayahu says, greater. I mean, that's okay, a comforting words. Greater than having children, I will give them a name, Tov mi banim, a Yad Vashem. So that's why the Holocaust memorial is called Yad Vashem. The people couldn't have children, were killed. But they should have, unfortunately, not everybody is blessed with children. The Chamali, which you have mentioned, wasn't blessed with children, the Babacher Rebbe, Chazonish, so many of the great Torah, the Satmar Rebbe. It's amazing, actually, how many of the great Torah builders of the 20th century didn't have any children. I don't know what God was doing here exactly, but it's an amazing thing. God blessed us with some of the greatest leaders in hundreds of years, and to produce great communities after the war, we needed these great leaders, but Some of them had no children. It's like, I don't know. Anyways, but okay, God doesn't bless you with children. But that's so there are other things you do. But ideally, you, if one can, one should fulfill the mitzvah properly, like, or properly, literally, or literally, biologically, and perform the mitzvah in its deeper sense. So that's what the Rambam said, Ein biyad wafan. So a person said, I don't want to get married. He could get married. He could have children. I don't want to. It's not for me. Okay, so if you're really like that, okay, so you're not sinning. It's not a great thing. Anyways, that's Ben Azay. That's a little bit. That's a fascinating thing. The Rambam has a similar idea. Rav Lichtenstein commented on it. The Rambam, of course, you know, he contradicts himself on like in so many places. Of course, he's not really he's following what do we do in the Torah. The Torah is a book of contradictions. We say every single day, those who daven get the shul early enough, or say every single day, there are two verses, the Torah is full of contradiction, because life is full of contradiction. We have to, this is here, this is there. So the Rambam is full of contradictions. So, so Rav Chaim, we come up with answers. This applies here, this applies there. So the Rambam in Hilchot Talmud Torah says a person who learns in Kolel, it's a pretty frightening Rambam if you're learning in Kolel. If you're not learning in Kolel, okay. Rambam says a person who takes money, remember, Yagia Kapecha Kitochal. So the Rambam goes much further. That's not just the nice thing. Like you're forbidden to take money for learning Torah. The Rambam refused taking money. He's the one. Rambam absolutely forbidden. It's like the worst thing in the world. And the Rambam says you lose your share in the world to come. I don't make this up. Maybe if you have time later, I can show you the actual source inside. The Rambam says a person who takes money for studying Torah loses his share in the world to come. And then the Rambam writes, somebody who, the Shevet Levi, they were dedicated to the service. You need civil servants, religious leaders, fine. They were dedicated. So that's their role. They had to give in support. They had to give in truma and masrot because they don't work for a living. They teach and they run the temple and the civil servant. So the Rambam writes, you know, Shevet Levi, like we were talking, like children. It's not only biological. Anybody can be a member of Shevet Levi. Somebody who loves Torah so much, and the Rambam uses the term kolba eolam, meaning even non-Jews, apparently, because the Rambam goes philosophical imprint, and you know, and anybody who seeks God can learn Torah all day and be a member of the tribe of Levi. Rav Lichtenstein said, you have to look yourself in the mirror. Do you think this, have you ever watched a television show in your life? Have you ever, you know, read a newspaper? Have you ever schmoozed with your friends? Like, then this is not for you. Shevet Levi is not for you to be a volunteer member. Anyways, but that's, Ben Azai, the one who put everything in, and we don't consider, and Taka, he died young. You would expect a person like that would seek God, go into parties, and you know what? It didn't work. It didn't work. It killed him. Like, it killed everybody except Rabbi Kiva. Okay. We'll have to pick up what he did next week. I see it's already 10:28. So we'll do heavy ruts, the mitzvah call. You have to run to a light mitzvah. What's a light mitzvah? Light, easy, light, not important, less important. Because hierarchy mitzvah, the very important stuff. This is beautiful stuff for Kevah. But just to very quickly review, we discussed the bends. You only get a name, perhaps when you get married, but here when you get smicha. Otherwise, you're known, as long as your parents are educating you, you're known as your parents' children. Even Yochanan ben Zakkai is occasionally known as Ben Zakkai before he had smicha. These people, tzitz, they look too much. The tzitz, like the tzitz of the Kohen Gadol, are tzitzit. They're limits to what we can see. Even as God told Moshe, too much. Then we learned about the four things we all like, want in life. We want wisdom as when we're younger, and strength, and middle age. We like wealth, and then honor. You know, we can't take it with us. We want our honor. And these are things we can all control. Benzoma gives us reason. We're not dependent on what other people. We're not dependent on our IQ. We're not dependent on the economy. We're dependent on what we can do for ourselves. We have to learn Torah from everybody, even people that don't be so arrogant. You can learn from younger people. Often you can learn much more from younger people. And don't be so arrogant that you don't want to teach younger people. We can teach younger people. We can even learn from animals. As the Gemara says, strength and physical strength, koach and gvura, the two ideas. And of course, being ashir, being wealthy, then probably the hardest one. Be happy not only with what you have, but be happy with what somebody else has. Everything is relative. That's not a good thing to judge ourselves by always, you know, other people. But not only what we have, but we should earn it ourselves. Yegia kapecha, that's even greater than a person who is a yirei shamayim. And then we just started, by the way, I didn't say, maybe I'll just mention last week, when Ben Zoma died, but Lou had Hadarshanim, we'll leave that for next week, Ben Zoma and Benazi. And then we just introduced the concept of marriage and Torah and the purpose of, one of the purposes, not the purpose, one of the purposes of children is to pass on our Masorah, to pass on our tradition. You have the original Peruvu to conquer the world, and that's sort of a Jewish thing. And that we can do even if you don't have children. A Yad Vashem, and you can teach Torah and not any sinners. Okay, we can stop here. Let's see, any questions? Gita Nasha repeated. Yeah, so that's, Judith, that, I was thinking of that. I don't have an answer to that question. The Rambam writes this on the Mishnah in Gita Nasha. The Mishnah in Chulin talks about the mitzvah of Gita Nasha. That's where it's written. Chulin is about kosher animals, right? There's Kotshim and Chulin. So you got Yizvachim and Nachot. And then we talk on Chulin, the animals we want to eat. So I think it's the seventh or the, I think in the seventh parak, there the Mishnah talks about Gita Nasha. So it's on that Mishnah that the Rambam tells us that the mitzvah of Gita Nasha is not because Yaakov Avinu had a fight with the angel. But I'm going to look it up again, but I don't think he quotes the source. We know, B'yom HaShmini Yimo B'Sarato, so I don't know where the source of Gita Nasha is after Matan Torah. And I'm not sure, really, I'm not sure that everybody agrees with this Rambam. It's often quoted, but it could be not everybody agrees. I'm not sure that's something, I don't know. I'll try to look into that, but thank you for that. I don't know what Tova's saying, but avoid, yeah, we don't like fighting. That's I'm referring to. Okay, any other questions, comments, or criticisms? Always, that's the best, most important. Or suggestions, happy to hear. Otherwise, we want to wish everybody a Shabbat Shalom. Next week, please God, the 12 more shiurim, beginning Sunday morning at 10 a.m. Daniel Feldman, Halachot Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, which is this week's Parsha, of course. Kedoshim, Menachem Liptag on Shavuot, leading up to Shavuot and Matan Torah, and Ari Shvat on Monday morning on religious Zionism, different views. He's actually quite fascinating. This is our first time teacher, as is Ilana Goldstein teaching Megillat Rut, and as is Ora Wiskin teaching on Chassidut. Those two are on Tuesday. I'm sure you have the whole schedule. Take a look. And all right, everybody, be well. Be well. Okay, Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Shabbat Shalom.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for coming. Okay, all the best. Have a wonderful day.
Rabbi, can I ask a question now, or should I?
Of course, I said anybody can ask. Yeah.
Okay. Look, no. Talmud Torah, Keneged Kolam. What's pshat on Talmud Torah? Teaching or learning?
I would say it's both. I would really say it's teaching. I really say it's
the grammatical thing. Talmud, the Lamed or the Lamed.
Of course, in order to teach, listen, there you have to look. What's the goal of learning if you're not going to share? Kind of like our money, like that I know something. Well, so what if you know something? Now, I have to learn. I want to become a great posai, you know. So obviously, yeah. You have to sit and learn, and like anything, you have to do, you're doing research in a university, you know. How much does a teacher in a university teach, a researcher? But we understand the goal of his research is to have practical benefit. For a person to sit and learn and not share that knowledge, it's wasted. It's not up. That's why halachically there's a fascinating discussion on copyright issues. Let's say Nechama Leibowitz wouldn't allow us to tape her shiurim. I think it's one of the great tragedies that we don't have, as far as I know, we have no tapes of her shiurim. One of the greatest teachers in the 20th century, and we don't have anything she had because she refused. Rav Soloveitchik, everything's on tape. We don't have access to all of them, but you know, hundreds of tapes and everything. And you know, today everything's recorded. And the Nechama Leibowitz told us, Bahar Sinai lo hayu tape recorders. They didn't, that was how we tape. Bahar Sinai, there were no tape recorders. And her point was, and she's not wrong about it, it's different going to a shiur with the teacher in the room and sort of in the car, you know, half, you know, I'm cleaning up and half asleep, you know, I'm listening. It's real Torah, but yeah, I have to teach. But the purpose of learning is to teach. Well, there's no purpose just to know Torah. Like, who cares if you know Torah? So I was going to say, the question is, would somebody be allowed to, against her rules, to defy her and tape it? So, because it's not her Torah. That's what some, that was the big fights in the Middle Ages on the Ramah, the printing of the Rambam, a whole sugi there. I'm not holding there now, but a whole fights on about reprinting and who owns Torah, who owns copyright. But if a rabbi writes something and he says, I don't want this to be disseminated, it's not his Torah necessarily. Torah belongs to Klal Yisrael. So yes, the mitzvah of learning is not, yeah, you have to learn to teach, but the mitzvah is to share your Torah.
Okay, thank you.
Teaching is the greatest thing. Yeah, I think that's an issue we have today. People just want to learn on their own. I mean, of course, when you teach kids in high school, I teach in chat. I don't learn. Like, obviously, if I stayed at home and instead of teaching, I learned two blood of Gemara, I would gain more technical knowledge. But I my perspective on learning is sometimes much more greatly enhanced by teaching. And of course, you have to teach. Yeah. But believe me, I've learned Pirkei Avot here. You know, I sit here with my notes. I sit down, especially on Zoom. If this is law, I can't. So you have to prepare in a certain way that, you know, when I'm learning, I wouldn't prepare this. When you're teaching it, you have to formulate your thoughts. You have to make sure they make sense. So teaching is the greatest way to learn.
Yes, that was
a long answer, but I hope I answered your question.
Thank you. Yes, essentially teaching and learning is like a hechsher mitzvah, so to say.
Right. Learning is a hechsher mitzvah. Yeah. So lomod al menot lasot. Right. And then even teaching is, so we should do. Even when, what's the purpose of knowledge if we don't put into practical use?
Yes, thank you. And another comment, if I may. Look, v'ahavta l'rayecha kamocha, that's lovely as much as... It's very difficult if somebody else, a colleague of mine, gets an honor that I think I really deserved more.
Yeah, I should be
happy for his sake.
Right.
Sorry,
we're human beings. This isn't easy, right? When I say, I throw out this belief in God is hard. It is hard. Yeah, we can, I believe, but what does it mean to believe in God? It means you believe God is watching you. So how can anybody ever cheat? How can we ever sin? Okay, but we're human beings. Ain't tzaddik bar tesher lo yechta. No, they're sinning. There's a guy cheats. Well, okay, that's fine. But if your whole business is set up like as a corrupt business, then you're an atheist. I don't care. You're an atheist, and whatever. It's we have very from atheists today. Yes. Some. I mean, but we're human beings. But of course, it's very hard. I mean, I think the two hardest are Ashir and Kavod. Hello, when we call Adam, not so hard. People can see that. To be happy with what we have, whoever has 100 wants 200, we know how true that is. So hard. And honor, we kill for honor. People, that's the funny thing. We give away money to get honor. I mean, so many people. I don't think that's a bad thing even. Like, we know the that's a machloket, the Ramah Paskins, when you give a lot of tzedakah, it seems like you're obligated, maybe too strong a word, you should have your name on the building. Because human, the Mechaber Paskins, Rav Yosef Gar writes, so you give tzedakah, you give privately, everybody knows that. Don't show off. And the rest of them, who are we kidding here? Well, the goal of giving tzedakah is to want to encourage other people. No one person can give all the money. We need to, how do you encourage other people? By giving honor. People love honor by putting names. So the Ramah writes, when you put your name on the building, more people are going to give money. I've told this story many times on the Schottenstein Talmud. The art scroll went to another. Somebody told me, I don't know. I'm not going to mention which name, but I was told art scroll went to a famous philanthropic family and the family turned them down. They weren't interested in the, whatever, people believe me, they don't give to everything. Even multi-billionaires can't even, give to everything. And they turned them down. And then they went to Schottenstein and Schottenstein gave whatever he gave. And this first family was kicking themselves in their pants. The whole world knows about Schottenstein, the Schottenstein Talmud. You go to Daf Yomi, we're going to Schottenstein. Jay Schottenstein sits on the dais with all the Gedolei Torah. Because, that's fine. I'm not saying you're not worthy. And I said, what idiots, for $2 million, we could have gotten all this honor. I don't think, that's normal. That's how, so the Ramah says, the next time they're asked for something, they'll probably say yes, because that's what people want. So the Ramah says, the Ramah says you should have your name. So I don't know if it's obligatory because we know. I'm not going to mention names, but you know, I can think here in Toronto, there are certain families that are well known for not publicizing what they give. And sometimes families don't want to publicize because they definitely don't want everybody bothering them. You know, if all of a sudden sees, I never saw that. Oh, he must have a lot of money. Then, you know, every charity in the world comes knocking on your door. People don't want that. So it's a complicated, but again, always the halakha is balancing the ideal and the real. In an ideal, of course, in an ideal world, you give staka not for honor, but we're not, I don't even know that we have to strive for that all the time. Like some things are just, it's okay to be human. Like you don't have to feel bad. You don't have to feel bad that you have your name on a bill. How, you know, Halavai, I should have my name on a building. You know, I try to be Hasamech Bechoko. That's Baruch Hashem. People who can do that have a wonderful life. And it can make life so much better.
Thank you. Really interesting. Shabbat Shalom.
Okay. Shabbat Shalom. Thank you, everybody. And okay, we'll see you next week, please, God. Okay, bye-bye.